Blog Talk Radio.
Tell me that there is no.
Welcome to the special edition of On Point. I'm Don Allen, and in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, there's a lot of craziness going on tonight.
Yes, sir, Mr. Allen. In fact, we're monitoring. Can you hear me there?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay. We're monitoring all the channels. There's been another homicide in Minneapolis along the 4300 block of 5th African-American. Shot, dies at the hospital. Channel 4 now, Channel 5, Channel 9, all trying, and Channel 11 trying to break the breaking story here with regard to unbelievable tensions within the Minneapolis Police Department, if you will, Mr. Allen. They say just two MPD officers are accused of using racial slurs, but on tonight's program we're going to be dealing with a number of cases in which race has been a prime issue and has led to significant tension between black and white officers in this department, and we only have about 67 black officers in this department out of almost 1,000 police officers. In other words, the so-called contingency of color are about maybe 100. Out of almost 1,000, so you can imagine what we're up against. It's really a delicate situation here right now. I know you have some postings, as I do. Also, these officers are Powell, who is legendary in the beating of African-Americans and et cetera. Troll involved in, both of them, by the way, involved in the killing of a Somali in 2009 on a so-called traffic incident, if you will. By the way, this reporter on Channel 11 needs to know that we understand her relationship to Chief Janae Harto.
Oh, yeah.
She needs to do a little bit more balanced reporting, if you will. But let me say this at the top of the hour on this program, on this special, taking a look at racial tensions within the Minneapolis Police Department in the city of Minneapolis. It was never the intention of the chief to deal with the racial epithets and et cetera. She only became concerned when she saw the information pertaining to how they identified her as a lesbian and began to talk in personal terms about her style, her demeanor, and et cetera. She will now use race, Mr. Allen, to gain public sympathy. And basically, Negro leaders here are being positioned to run out and embrace that. But let me give you a story, if you
want,
John.
And
by the way, those phone lines are open. Give that number if you want, and then I'll go into a particular couple of cases where race was never dealt with.
Okay, our number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Go ahead, Mr. Edwards.
Let me tell you, as a five-year facilitator for the Department of Justice and overseer in the monitoring of this department from 2004-2008, we uncovered a lot of cover-up, if you will. Actions being directed against communities of color, particularly Native American, black. And we tried to, in that five-year period, Mr. Allen, make recommendations relevant to head off what we see happening now. What basically happened, because this is a Democratic enclave, the mayor is a Democrat, the city council is all Democratic except for one Green Party. The state government is Democratic, et cetera. And so the Obama administration and the Department of Justice have no interest of coming back in. But I have to tell you, based on the evidence that has been gathered just over the last couple months, this department needs to be placed in receivership.
Yes.
In federal receivership. which was our recommendation in 2003. The compromise was to appoint and elect, and we say that again, elect a panel called Police Community Relations Council who met and guided what we thought was change within the Minneapolis Police Department for 5 years. 5 years. Some of us took out of our lives to try to bring about a better department, particularly along the lines of race relations, racial conflict, and et cetera. Now, Chief Harto has known ever since she was a rookie who went to work on the north side. She has known that racial animus exists in this department, not only against African Americans, but against her own people, the Native Americans, okay? And let me give you an example of a particular case that has exactly the same vibes as the one in Green Bay.
Okay.
Just after the first of the year, two Minneapolis police officers, both SWAT team members, were at a bar in Apple Valley. For our domestic and international audience, Apple Valley is a suburb just south of Minneapolis in Dakota County. Dakota County is the county just adjoining Hennepin County, from which we are broadcasting, and the city of Minneapolis is the county seat, quote unquote. Two officers involved in a night of drinking and et cetera confronted a group of African Americans, just like their buddies were to do a number of months later, 29th of June here, around the 29th of January, in fact, in Apple Valley. There was a confrontation. The African Americans prevailed. One of them after even being sucker punched. But what happened was the two Minneapolis SWAT team officers were detained. And later an officer by the name of Woodson was arrested. And ultimately, he was sentenced to 4 days in the county lockup in Dakota County for his conduct and public display and et cetera. Now, because he had used, and I hate to do it, but it's going to have to be said, he used reference to niggers so much during the confrontation outside of the bar in Apple Valley that many were extremely offended when they realized that he was a police officer. But he's been doing this for a long time. His associate who was with him has been doing it for a long time. And so what happened, he received 4 days as it pertains to his activities, his acts of violence, his public display of racial animus and et cetera towards the African Americans that he picked a fight with, and he lost. Okay. A short time after he got out of jail from serving his 4 days, he was arrested for DWI, driving while under the influence. Now, that in itself should have caused a major review of his license as a law enforcement officer and his continued employment. But as a member of the SWAT team, and he's been involved in a number of entries and beatings of African Americans, etc., he was left on the force. Now, about the same time, an officer by the name of Chamberlain beat an African American in handcuffs and was, in fact, assigned to a desk, which he is currently still occupying. Now, Woodson, Chamberlain, now these officers, okay? But during Janae's tenure as a commander, assistant chief, and now chief, she has been well aware of the racial animus directed towards African-Americans, and as I said, towards her own Native American officers, and we have really very few Native American officers in this department. And so it is peculiar that she really did not have a lot of interest when she was first advised that there had been a racial confrontation in Green Bay. It was not until she saw the transcripts, I repeat again, the transcripts as well as the electronic our taping of some of the just outrageous comments made in the lobby of the Green Bay Police Department where Thole and Powell went to tell officers of the Green Bay Police Department that they catered to and cuddled niggers and et cetera. Now, much of that is in the 40-page incident report, Mr. Allen, that is now in the hands of, quote-unquote, all of the media, though we first reported this past Saturday, okay?
Of course, being
black journalists, what is it that we know? And, of course, it's not the gospel until it's reported by white folks. Well, now the white folks are having to report it. Now, the Woodson-Apple Valley situation is one that is extremely perilous for the chief and the department. Also, let me say this, and then any calls or et cetera. I find it extremely distasteful and distressful that neither the mayor, city council president, no member of the city council, and the man who is the chairman of the public safety committee, which the police department reports to, who is the only black on the Minneapolis City Council, Don Samuels, have not uttered a single word. Now, you have to understand, Mr. Allen, this investigation has been going on now for almost a month. But it wasn't until the very graphic descriptions of lesbian comments, anti-lesbian comments that were made, that the chief became upset.
Yes.
Okay. And so we need to understand that. And the black community here really needs to understand it, that it's a game. And in some respects, Channel 11 and Channel 9 are playing a game with regards to reporting on this, because there was no concern when Woodson and another officer, and then in the situation of Officer Chamberlain, which is a separate situation, were involved with serious racially motivated, racially driven conflict, and including the beatings. And in the case of Officer Toe and Officer Powell, the killing of a person of color, a Somalian, a East African, and et cetera, there was no concern about their demeanor, Mr. Allen. This department, this city, was quite comfortable with their racial animus. Now, here's the other piece that came into play. And if there are any questions for us, any calls, we will go into even greater detail. When they began in the hallway or the lobby of the Green Bay Police Department to malign and attack, and this is before they said anything about the chief, by the way, their own fellow black police officers, and they started talking about how they handled niggers in their town and how they killed niggers, if you will, and how they'll blow their effing heads off and et cetera. In light of what happened in this city on May 10th, 2013, when a young African-American had his head actually blown off in a basement with five SWAT team members. He was unarmed, if you will. And as I have reported, he was actually unconscious because he had been beaten into unconsciousness by the five officers. Okay? This department is so dangerous at this particular point, I will not be surprised if a white officer shoots a black officer in this department in the next 6 months.
Wow.
You heard it here. I will not be surprised. There is that much animosity towards black people and their own fellow black officers. And most of the black officers here, the small contingent, you know, just try to get along to get along. Now, there are a group of senior black officers led by Sergeant Charles Adams and others who will not tolerate this kind of thing, but they are despised. And, in fact, the word is that Chief Harto has refused promotions for some of these black officers because of the initial animus and expressions of outrage that Negroes be provided with any kind of significant task. Now, we have a black deputy chief, Ed Frizzell, but they love Ed Frizzell because they maintain Ed Frizzell's never going to speak up about the racial animus in the Minneapolis Police Department. I repeat again what I said. This department needs to be placed under federal receivership. But it's not going to happen. And in 5 to 6 months, we're going to have a white officer, because we've already had a situation of an officer drawing her weapon on a fellow officer and pointing it at him, and they've been trying to keep that quiet also. That happened just in the last couple of months.
Wow.
Yeah.
Incredible. Well, this thing is it's very interesting, Mr. Edwards. You had stated already that Don Samuels, Minneapolis City Councilman, Ward 5, North Minneapolis, has not uttered a peep about any of this, and neither is the council president, and it's highly suspect in what they're doing and what procedure. I mean, of course, all of them are busy running for mayor, and none of the candidates for mayor, none of the city council currently seated or trying to be seated.
Only Doug Mann. Only Doug Mann has raised
Doug
questions in platforms about the racial temperament inside the police department in the city of Minneapolis, as well as the overall temperament towards African-Americans by the city government under R.T. Ryback. But, you know, R.T. Ryback is the deputy chair of the Democratic National Committee, DNC. So, you know, nobody wants to embarrass the Democratic Party.
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. Not in Minnesota, anyway.
Definitely not.
So
definitely
it's about
not.
Time. Mm-hmm. So, wow.
Give that number out again, Don. I'd like to hear some inquiry and questions about what's happening here.
Yeah,
by the way, let me say this also on behalf.
We have a caller.
Let's get him. Go right ahead.
Caller, you're live on the air. What's your question? Hello, caller.
Oh, are you talking to me?
Yes, sir, Mr.
Yes.
Mann.
Oh yeah, this is Doug Mann. It took me a few times to get through the line.
We were just taking your name in vain, Mr. Mann. What can we do for you? What's your question?
Well, I did want to observe that, you know, what's going on in the police department is reflective of an attitude on the part of the city generally about systemic racism. There is no real...
Go ahead, elaborate.
Well, I mean, you know, there is no real concern that, you know, a group of people is considered to be unworthy of things like housing, jobs, and education. And, you know, if you have that attitude, then you're going to also maybe have the attitude why not stalk and kill people like that.
Okay.
I think this is, you know, what's going on in the police department is somewhat reflective of what's going on elsewhere in City Hall.
Is this one of the reasons why the outgoing mayor, who was supposed to be such a great bleeding heart liberal, has been absolutely silent about the racial animus that he knows this department is involved in? And Mr. Mann, by the way, the gentleman talking to us, is a candidate for mayor, and we wish him the best. But do you think that when you look to leadership to take the moral high ground and leadership doesn't do it, then you have decadence. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's fair to say, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Anything else, Mr. Mann?
Well, on the question of schools, I ran into Ryback asked him about the segregation and discrimination against students of color in the school system, and you know, he just put on kind of an ugly face, and his wife
looked irritated.
Something about
me
being one of those awful NAACP types.
Okay, and by the way, Mr. Mann is a Caucasian, but has been a longtime member of our NAACP. Which really is basically almost non-functional here because of directives given by the mayor and, you know, and though it's been opposed by the current president of the NAACP, Booker Hodges, who, by the way, gentlemen, is a deputy sheriff in Dakota County where the Apple Valley incident took place, by the way. And at some point, if someone asked us, we will go into more significant details on how politically sensitive that was when Officer Woodis was arrested and incarcerated in Dakota County. But we're not surprised, Mr. Mann, and I think my colleague Mr. Allen is not, with respect to the disdain that R.T. Ryback holds for the African-American. He's a typical liberal. He disguises his animus well, but sometimes if you draw him out, he'll show just what a quote-unquote bigot he is.
Ooh. Well, Mr. Edwards, you don't think he's a visionary like I do?
Oh, yes. He's the kind of visionary that would be had been a part of the Kirk government in South Africa in the 1960s.
Oh, yeah.
And his vision would have been a white, free South Africa. Oops.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of visionary that R.T. Rybak is, if you're talking about him being a visionary. Again, I repeat, he's the kind of guy that would have got over big time in de Kirk's South Africa in the 1960s and 70s and 80s, okay? Because he's the kind of guy that talks about purification, and he's what actually Mr. Mann touched on at the very beginning of his reflections, that if you get a city that feels that people don't have the right to education, to housing, to jobs, to a future, and et cetera, then you have no problem talking in terms of what they should expect to suffer at the hands of security forces. In some regards, we're not doing any better here than they're doing in Cairo, Egypt, right now. Okay? Is Mr. Mann still with us? Mr. Mann, if you are, I want to thank you.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, I'm still with you.
Okay.
Yeah,
anything else?
I've advocated since I became a mayoral candidate, funding a program to detect and prosecute people engaged in covert illegal discrimination in the job and housing market.
Mm.
That's something I've advocated for a long time, actually. I'm raising it as a candidate. And, that's the kind of thing that the major media here doesn't want to cover. They don't want issues like that raised.
Because they're involved in that very practice. When you take a look at their anchor desk and their personnel and et cetera, they don't do very well hiring African-Americans at any level in their news organizations. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. Yep. Well, Mr. Mann, thank you very much for calling. And stay tuned to the show because we have a lot of callers lined up, and feel free to call back. Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you,
sir.
You
bet. I'll let you go.
All right, thanks. All right. Any other calls, Mr. Howell?
Yes.
Because the lines are open. Let's hear it.
Yes, they are. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Real good, sir.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, thank you for this special edition. It's always good that, you know, when news is important, that people interrupt what they're doing to bring us that type of news. That says something a lot about you gentlemen's stature as gentlemen and as journalists. I appreciate
it. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Any specific question? Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, two. I got two. One, first of all, I'm shaking because your predictions have generally been on the mark for quite some time. And when you gave us your latest prediction within the 6 months, I kind of shook. I said, because, you know, Mr. Edwards is generally right. And most of the stuff that he's predicted has come to fruition. And so I kind of shook with that, you know, just to think about it. And I hope that other people will think about it, too, and pay a little bit more attention to On Point and some of the predictions that you make. The other thing is that in reading the language that was used to talk about, you know, the monkeys and that sort of stuff, to describe some of us and everything, well, to some point, you know, they kind of got a point, because when you look in terms of the so-called black leadership, we do have a bunch of monkeys and, you know, I've never not really disagreed with you, but I'm just, and Mr. Allen, I've never not really disagreed with you in terms of a lot of the points that you make. But this time, you know, they might just have something, because this so-called leadership is so weak that they can just call it names like they want to. And I think that is the reason that they are just, you know, just brashing, because we don't have any leadership. We don't have any representation. You guys are talking about it right now, about, who's standing out there in the front talking about and really addressing this stuff. You know, beyond this bandwagon, Trayvon Martin, social media, wear your hoodie, turn your profile black, you know, besides all of that, I mean, after so much marching, I mean, myself, I marched with Martin Luther King when I was 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
All the way up to the Million Man March. I mean, there's only so much marching that you can do until you have to take a stand.
Let me say this, sir. Our listening audience across the world, et cetera, you know, I'm pained by something that you remind me of, and I had discussed it at a pre-production meeting earlier today. One of the reasons for callers domestically and internationally about, well, okay, where are the black police officers at about this and et cetera? Well, here's what happened. In 2005, 2006 in this city, black police officers came together and moved a legal action to sue this department in the city. And five Pacific officers, all of command status, which is kind of unusual, filed a suit. In fact, their nickname was the Mill City Five. In July of 2007, gentlemen, the then chief Tim Dolan and this current mayor, R.T. Ryback, talked in terms that they really wanted to try to address the concerns that had been raised and was being raised by these African-American police officers. As I said before, we only had 62 at that time. We got 67 now. Okay, that tells you about progress. So what happened was the Black Police Officers Association, which was under attack from a significant, powerful segment of white police officers with the support of some politicians, indicated that they were prepared to ask the leadership of our community, led by the so-called ecumenical leadership, to represent their interests. In August of 2007, a so-called delegation of ecumenical leaders met with Chief Tim Dolan. And I'll be damned if they did not, in fact, betray the cause of the African-American police officers. And in September of 2007, a minister by the name of Randolph Staton approached a meeting of the Police Community Relations Council, PCRC, which we were the monitors on behalf of the Department of Justice. And what this minister said to us is that he and his other ministerial colleagues had met with the chief. They were convinced that African-American officers were incorrect. I want you to follow this closely, gentlemen, that they were incorrect, that they had been misled, that they did not recognize the conditions and circumstances in which they were being employed and working within and et cetera. And these Negroes sided with Chief Tim Dolan. So in the meeting at the Southside Urban League in September of 2007, this black minister, great leader, former state legislator, et cetera, said that the black police officers must show intent to stand up and do something for themselves. Now, at that point, I was aware that they were involved in significant preparation for a lawsuit, which they filed on the third day of December in 2007 against the city of Minneapolis, later settled for $750,000, which to me kind of implies, particularly with taxpayers' money, that something must have been wrong, right? Do you know that when approached once again, that the Ministerial Alliance, the black leadership groups, and et cetera, said we do not need to get involved and refuse to take a stand on some of the recommendations that the Black Police Officers Association, which later was just absolutely decimated by Chief Dolan using operatives, if you will, Sergeant Pat King, Lieutenant Andy Smith, and others, was decimated and, in fact, no longer exists, okay? Now, gentlemen, that may answer a question we all have in the back of our minds. Well, why aren't black police officers standing up and saying something? They have been totally and absolutely betrayed by the leadership of this community, sir. And I'm talking to the caller that we now have on the air. And I'm just compelled, sir, to let you know about a piece of history of how bad things are in this city and why this leadership is in no position to stand up and say a word. That is a piece of history. It is documented. The minutes of the September 2007 minutes are in the files of the Department of Justice. Oops, if you will. The statements by Reverend Staton and others are well known, well chronicled, and et cetera. And, gentlemen, that's what we're facing in this city right now. And this is one of the darkest moments for relationships between the African-American community and the police department. And the media and others can play the game they want to play, but we're on dangerous ground. We're on very, very dangerous ground, gentlemen. Any questions to me on the narrative I just gave?
That is confirmed, because I do recall it. And if the person who was representing the Department of Justice, was that not Ken Bergeron?
No, what happened, he was replaced by Ms. Robinson. Ms. Robinson replaced Ken, and she later, in fact, how I knew her was that I was called to Cincinnati, in the early 1970s when that department imploded. And I had a chance to meet her, and when I was given an opportunity in the process of becoming a member of the PCRC and then later one of its co-chairs along with the very legendary Clyde Belcourt, we asked for Miss Robinson to be sent here, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the betrayal, September 2007, the Black Ministerial Alliance said that the black police officers had not proved their allegations.
Wow. Well, I mean, well, one of the things, though, it does validate their reasoning for indicating to some people as, or alluding to some people as monkeys, because that was truly, that was not monkey shine, you know, I mean, because, and first of all, I appreciate, Mr. Edwards, you know, you being so eloquent and not to just say that the Negroes sold us out. You know, I appreciate
yes,
that
sir, thank
and all of your eloquence and all of your eloquence. The other piece, and before I look, and while I have you on, because I know your time is precious, I was reading a piece about Dick Gregory had said that, you know, first of all, you don't have black policemen policing white neighborhoods. You've never heard of a black policeman shooting a white kid for any reason whatsoever. The question that he was asking, are black policemen more professional? Are they more, you know, do they handle these situations a little bit better? Because one of the things they know that if a black policeman had killed a white kid, you know, his head would be on the guillotine. And the other piece I want you to allude to with the both of you is that there was this senator, I think that's in Chicago, that's saying that people are saying to her that with all of these killings that you're hearing about, with no arrests being made, that police are randomly killing people, black people, on city streets and such. She's saying that she's getting this from her constituents, not that she's alleging any of this, but that she's getting this from her constituents, that somebody's doing this, you know, just killing people. I don't know if you might have read or heard anything about that, but
I've been an advocate of the existence, I mean, not for, but an advocate of the existence of death squads in this country for a long time. And these death squads have and are operating in Minneapolis. The reason for so many cold cases, if you will, in other words, cases that don't seem to be solved, young African-Americans found laying in the middle of the street, always shot through the head, a fatal wound, or found in the alley. And, you know, I don't know we'll ever uncover all of the bodies of young black men that are thrown into the Mississippi River. So the Chicago scenario, I concur with that. I think it's very mysterious. It's just like the latest homicide in this city 3 hours ago. The young African-American that was gunned down from an automobile that had heavily tainted windows. You know what I mean? In other words, it's difficult to see into the car. Windows rolled down in the back. Young man is hit with precise shots, dies at the hospital. Now, will it be solved? I have no idea.
Mm. Yep.
Because our unsolved rate here in the city of Minneapolis, actually is about 80% of our homicides go unsolved. 80%?
One last question.
Mm-hmm.
How many, and again, as you've spoken, you know, very well about our black police department and some of the people that you named, I've come to meet and known, but of the Minneapolis Police Department, of the, was it 67 now, police officers, that,
well,
black police
yeah,
officers that we
yeah.
have now, 67.
Right.
Since it was 64 in 2007, and it's 67 now.
62, and then you're right. Picked up about 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm. Picked up about 4 or 5, okay. How many of them, black police officers, have been involved in shootings of white citizens?
Of who?
Of white.
Not a single one, sir. Not a single one.
And of even of black as well. How many shootings?
Actually, not a single one.
Mm.
Not in over 20 years.
So does this give not only credence but validation to what Dick Gregory was talking about?
It absolutely does, and I had the opportunity to be on a panel with Dick many, many years ago, and we talked about it. This is way back in 1981. The legendary Rex Marshall had put on a hell of a symposium at the International Market Square. Dick and I developed a relationship, friendship, fellowship, and et cetera. We talked about that then. And as I said before, the last time that an African-American officer was involved in the shooting of an African-American suspect was over 20 years ago, and that officer has long since been retired.
And I'm pretty sure it was his life or his life.
Well, that there was some controversy. There was some controversy
about it.
But, of course, the grand jury exonerated. And, by the way, on that particular note, with the current history of the current county attorney, there will never be an indictment. People are talking about the Franklin case as an example. That's for people that are not aware. This was a brutal murder of a 22-year-old African-American named Terrence Terrell Franklin in a basement by the way, five members of the same unit that most of these officers that I've been talking about, white officers, are members of.
Gang? No, you didn't say gang. I said gang.
But you know what their actual symbol is? The Nazi death head. Death squad head.
So is there any
On my television program, I have published pictures of them at quote-unquote formal and informal gatherings with their neo-Nazi uniforms and Confederate materials and jackets. Their code name is City Heat.
Okay. Yeah. All right, caller. We appreciate you calling.
Thank you, caller.
We have the switchboard lit up. Thank you.
All right, let's get them.
Okay.
Thank you, caller.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Well, what I have to do is I have to take exception of just, you know, I think we sometimes may take the rhetoric too far. You know, we talk about what we have to look again within our own community. And when we talk about Chicago, when we talk about Minneapolis, and I've lived in Minneapolis, it's, you know, why aren't we looking within our community and seeing, you know, the brothers coming together, whether it's Blood, Crips, the Disciples, whoever it is, why don't we come together and try to figure this out? I mean, we had a white Hispanic just murdered a brother in cold blood, and they got away with it. So why aren't we looking at that condition and talking about that condition?
Well,
and
I think we are, but the specific situation that we're talking about this evening that has exploded here in our beloved city, in our Shangri-La, we didn't have anything to do with it. In fact, in the video, as an example, out of Green Bay, the young African-Americans used great restraint. In fact, I have to say to you that all the major stations in the wire service are reporting that one of the police officers, white police officers, actually threw the first punch, and yet he was not arrested, and the young African-Americans used restraint. And the young African-Americans in the Green Bay situation, as well as the bar in Apple Valley and other situations, did not aggravate, or were they the aggressors? And at some point, there has to be mutual responsibility, sir. Okay?
Right, and I believe that I'm in no way condoning, I believe that if you've taken that sworn, that oath to protect the community, you should have restraint. However, we're all humans, and I just, we have to take, and I am with every movement, I went and protested with the Trayvon Martin protesters here in Los Angeles, but I just think at some point we have to take accountability of what we are doing before we can go outside
and blame everyone else. You know, that's a doggone good point. Our community, the black police officers in 2007 took that responsibility on. They called attention to discrimination and racism in the department at the same time that they continued to carry out their law enforcement responsibilities, which included, if need be, the arrest of African-American suspects and others. At the point that they could not stand the racial animus anymore, they not only filed a lawsuit, which they won, but they reached out to the leadership of my community, and they said, please join us, please facilitate. And I just gave the narrative just a number of minutes ago to a previous caller that they asked the black ecumenical community, sir, to go in, ministers, men of the cloth, the reverent word. And they went in, and they betrayed them.
Well,
and then they said
you know
that the African-American police officers needed to show some guts and take an action. Of course, they didn't know that they were already working on a lawsuit. But after they filed their lawsuit on December 3rd, 2007, the black church, the black leadership turned their back on them.
Right. Well, and I think that should be expected, because I think I've called in before and I've mentioned to you, you know, people in my network that have you know, told me about videos that are out there on YouTube of a black minister professing his hate for you and professing for you, you know where he is. So how much really, you know, if you have a you have someone like that out there that's spewing that kind of hate, how can you really think that they're going to have the betterment of the community in their mind? So,
well,
you know, I think, again,
it
falls on us.
On me. I'll let my colleague, Mr. Allen, answer that one for you. I mean, you're right. I mean, you know.
It falls on us to police ourselves. It falls on us, I think, to police ourselves. And I don't think that, again, the brother that was spewing the hate, we have, again, the brothers from Islam that, you know, the ministers from Islam in the community that should be saying, you know, again, in our community, I think I told you, you know, there was a ride out here where, you know, classic cars and motorcycles and all of the bikes and everybody was one of the largest in that I can remember. And you know, they put out a warning. The FOIs
sure,
are watching.
If I'm not mistaken, you're one of our callers from California, from the far away. I mean, that's beautiful what you're saying, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
we don't have that kind of charisma in this city, in the Twin Cities here. We don't unfortunately have that. I mean, it was here at one time. It was here.
Right.
My colleague, Mr. Allen, who is a generation behind me, I mean, would agree, even as a young man when he was coming up. I'm not aware of your age, sir, but clearly there was
Well, we had that, and I think that, again, you were a part of that. So, you know, again, the brothers that are in the seminary that are, you know, in the pulpit, they're spewing. I don't understand what they're doing. So, let me finish one point, and then I'm going to go. But
okay.
Therein lies this the problem that I think that we have is that, again, you probably. I've heard you. I've listened to you. I've mentioned to you. I've lived in the Twin Cities area. I grew up there. So, you know, where is it at, and where is it going to come from? I don't see it. I don't. And when you see someone on tape, and I think I viewed the tape. One of my colleagues sent me the tape because, again, he knows I have an interest in that area. He was in fatigues. Come on, really? You're a person of the cloth, and you're in fatigues, and you're spewing hate and telling someone, you know where I am. I don't understand it. I love where you're coming from, Mr. Edwards. Please continue, Mr. Allen. Continue what you're doing. I'm gonna listen to the rest of the program over Blog Radio. Thank you
right,
so
thank
much,
you,
gentlemen.
Sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, we have another call.
Let's get the caller. And I've really been talking too much, Mr. Allen. I need you to flow in with me. But go ahead, caller. What's your question?
Caller, go ahead. You're live on the air. Terry, you're live on the air.
I'm in the queue today.
Oh, okay.
Oh, he's in the queue. Okay. Okay. Your take on this last caller. I mean, you know, laid some little bit of wood to us, but I hope that the history is here. I mean, what can we do, Mr. Allen?
Yeah, I mean, I understand exactly where the brother's coming from because we're like not that much older than each other. Number one, and
okay.
number two, there's a desperate cry out to address this stuff. He said one important thing: why can't the brothers come together? Okay, when you have people, and I'll just tell this short story. I wanted to be a part of the African American Leadership Forum. I gallivanted out to General Mills headquarters when they had one of their big meetings, and I had the brother in charge, Gary Cunningham, who is the husband of mayoral candidate Betsy Hodges. He was standing at the door and denied me admission, said, "You can't come in here." And I said, "Wow,
yes, sir, I remember
okay,
that.
Fine,
mm-hmm.
This is fine, okay." And so you have a group, a hierarchy, if you want to call it that, of African-American leadership that – you know, me and Mr. Edwards could go and say, "Hey, let's sit down, let's talk." You know, they will not sit down and talk. We have a senator, a seated senator, African-American senator, Senator Bobby Joe Champion, who will not shake my hand in public because I put a red nose, clown nose on his nose, okay? Well, he is a clown, okay? And so you have all these issues, and that we're looking at stuff, Mr. Edwards, that blows them away. They have no idea that we even know this information, and they're above questioning. So this is craziness. You know, these people at some point, they got to understand, and I understand what the caller was saying, but, you know, we've given it our best shot, you know, and so we stay in our lane. We do news.
So, hey, and that's what it's about. We're journalists. We bring forward the information in the news. We actually broke this story on the Green Bay situation, Apple Valley, the other issues that we discussed on the special last Monday night's program, this past Saturday, et cetera. There's only so much we can do. We don't control any organizations. I'm no longer the head of any organization. I was, for 20 years, the chairman of the board, et cetera, the Urban League. And what started happening, folks said we don't need to hear that old 1960 rhetoric. We need to have a change.
Mr. Edwards, we have a caller.
All right, let's get him.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, this is Terry from the Minneapolis Mirror.
Hey, what's happening?
Were talking how we haven't heard anything from Mayor Ryback or any of the city council members in regards to all of this racial issues going on. So this may not be relevant, but Mayor Ryback will be speaking at an annual fundraising event for the Democratic Party in, of all places, in Mississippi on August 9th. So what do you think he's going to bring to the table?
He'll be speaking in Mississippi on the issues of what?
He'll be speaking August 9th at the Mississippi Democratic Party's annual Jefferson Jackson Hammer Dinner.
Oh, yeah, Jefferson Jackson, right. Okay. Two pretty good races, by the way. Jackson and Jefferson, who both believed in slavery and segregation, but go ahead.
Well, again, I just, you know, it's just we have these issues going on, and he's going down to Mississippi of all places to speak. What is he going to say? Do as I say, not as we do?
Well, madam, I have to tell you, I am so disappointed that given the exposés that are spilling out now, and I guess the Star Tribune is finally going with some stories. They tell me the Star Tribune may have gotten their hands, Mr. Allen and a caller, on the actual audio of some of the statements that were being made about black police officers as an example. Now, this goes all the way back to a trial here in May of last year in which two, at that time, Minneapolis police officers later allowed to transfer over to the Sheriff's Department who called black police officers the scum of the earth. And black thugs and criminals, and said that they should be in the penitentiary and et cetera. In fact, it's the reason they lost the trial, because it was a non-jury, and the judge was waiting to see all these bad black police officers who were dealing in drugs and et cetera. And when they were never produced, he realized that it was nothing but a sham. And I think, Mr. Allen, you have a piece from City Pages about Sergeant King specifically, but let me not override the caller, is that, madam, I've reviewed, seen some of your work and some of your stories, and expect you to be commended. But this is a pattern in practice that is very frightening. And I repeat what I said. If we're not careful, we're going to have one of these white officers go off and shoot and kill a black officer in this city.
Well, you two seem to be very informative. So let me throw a question to you. Mm-hmm. Because what is coming out in light now of what happened in Green Bay is not uncommon. Anybody will tell you that this is how, you know, African Americans are spoken to all the time out on the streets. Ooh. By police officers. So my question is, if an insult wasn't made towards somebody from the LGBT community and Chief Harto, would we even be hearing about this?
No, and apparently you didn't hear the first 4 or 5 minutes of our program. Mr. Allen and I were engaged, and I said to Mr. Allen that I'm aware that this issue of race would not have come up until the chief had an opportunity to see the kind of statements that were made by the two officers about her, quote-unquote, sexual preference and et cetera, and they're very extremely derogatory comments about her. But here's the game that's being played. She figures and the liberals figure that if they play the race card or appear to play the race card, because what she's angry about is how these two officers depicted her, okay? And so she will be able to, you know, reap havoc, if you will, by probably moving to fire them. Though I got to tell you, the union is going to fight it every step of the way. And I'm not so sure that the city, quote unquote, will prevail, because one of the things that was said to me earlier this afternoon, caller, Mr. Allen, is that they've been present when these remarks have been made in front of Chief Harto, and he has never objected to it.
And I just want to say one more thing, and then I'm going to get off the phone. And I wrote a story about it. After Quantel Braxton's funeral at Shiloh Temple, there was a big to-do, and Vijay Smith and Mad Dads was there, and they didn't do anything to help the kids. The kids were getting pepper sprayed. A grandmother went up to a police officer that was parked across the street and asked them if he was going to do anything, and he told her to go stand with the rest of the animals.
Yeah, yeah. I heard about that and read about it, yes.
So this is nothing new, and it's, you know, I'm glad it's coming to light. I just hope something's done about it.
Well, I'm suggesting and certainly going to move the highway, the part of the highway that I travel on. This department really needs to be put in federal receivership. The Department of Justice, though they're not going to do it because of the Democratic affiliation, this department is out of control. And for the safety, and it's terrible, Mr. Allen and caller, that we're talking about not only the safety of citizens, but we're talking about the safety of the small group of African Americans in this department. If something isn't done, you understand, there will be a significant tragedy that will be synonymous with what happened in Cincinnati back in the 1970s. Thank you, caller. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, observation, Mr. Allen. Well, we got about 6 minutes left on this special program.
Yes, we do.
All right. Any additional calls? Because we don't want to leave anybody out there who's been waiting.
No callers only. Go ahead, Mr.
Okay. How do you read that the head of the Public Safety Committee, Don Samuels, who is a candidate for mayor, has been absolutely silent on this? Of Brett Buckner, a candidate for 5th Ward council member, who was running his mouth talking about that he would ask Chief Janae Harto to dismiss a officer in the shooting of Franklin. Why have they not said anything about these breaking stories out of Green Bay and Apple Valley, Minnesota, and the Chamberlain situation? Chamberlain, again, an officer who beat into unconsciousness a handcuffed African-American just about a month and a half ago, given desk duty. And I repeat what I said before. I am aware that during her career that Janae has been present when all kinds of racial epithets and et cetera have been expressed about fellow black officers, not quote-unquote the perps and the scumbags and et cetera, but about black men and the very few black women we have, because we only have about four or five on this department, that wear the same blue, swore the same oath. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The last time I looked, they all wear the same blue. They swore the same oath, you understand? And yet there is nothing but hatred and animus in this department against their fellow black police officers. Now, as this last caller said, Mr. Allen, you and I have talked about this infinitum. If there's that much hatred towards your colleagues, okay, the men and women that you have sworn oaths with, if there's that much animosity against them, man, we don't stand a chance as civilians.
No, we sure don't. We sure don't. So I was looking at that article you were talking about earlier, Mr. Edwards. Incoming Minneapolis Police Chief Janae Harto suspends cops based on rumor and innuendo by Alan Roper. People should read that. That's a lot of insight of this. You know, it was written back in, July 24th, 2012, but it will give you a lot of insight into what's going on today.
Right. And now that was a year ago that she knew that there were problems, because both King and Smith were at the forefront, and I repeat this again, were at the forefront of destroying the Black Police Officers Association. In fact, one of the things that happened in Green Bay that the two white officers from Minneapolis didn't recognize, they made certain statements about one very respected retired inspector of police, Don Banham, whose daughter, by the way, plays for the University of Minnesota. Don Banham served with distinction and et cetera, was formerly, previously, the inspector of the 4th Precinct. And one of the most respected veterans, I mean, I've known him since he came on the department, Sergeant Charles Adams, whose son is also a police officer in the Minneapolis Police Department, his brother, who is highly decorated, Tony Adams. And these white officers got to talking in terms of the Adams brothers and some others. And the reason that these white officers had respect, these guys worked together in a program that deals with NFL security. You know, there's an NFL team in Green Bay. There's one here. And these men have mutual respect. And what has happened, some of these white Green Bay officers were shocked by the animus. In fact, go back and take a look at the first couple pages, how many times the word nigger and black bastard and things like that has been redacted out of the damn statements.
Yeah.
You know, this... But Chief Hartow's concern was not about the racial animus. It was about the fact that she was personally attacked for her sexual preference by these officers. See, she's going to move to fire them, and that's going to be a very interesting battle between the city of Minneapolis and the Federation. Because you know what they're going to say, Mr. Allen, in
What's
the
that?
Last couple minutes we got left?
Yes.
What we just reported over the last 3 or 4 minutes. They're going to say, well, hell, you know, everybody says it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When the blacks aren't around. I mean, it's just a standard. And by the way, the picture of Officer Powell beating Mr. Jenkins into unconsciousness and that picture that's being shown now on some of the television stations, I mean, that was brutal.
Yeah, it was.
That was absolutely brutal. And then they should show the pictures of them killing the Somali cab driver in 2009. Oops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should see those too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
All right. We have a couple minutes left here. Any last words or what we want to do here today?
Well, let me reinforce the fact that none of this would be known to us if it had not been for the decision by a predominantly white police department in Green Bay, Wisconsin, a most overwhelmingly white city, who were extremely offended by the actions of Minneapolis police officers in their city to file a formal report. See, they filed an incident report, a 40-page document, Mr. Allen, with Minneapolis, and that put political pressure on the chief, the mayor, the city council, and et cetera.
Mm.
And I think they failed the test, sir. I think they failed the test.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. All right, you've been listening to On Point. I'm Don Allen, and over in Studio B, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Thank you, Mr. Edwards. This has been a great special edition, and come back on Saturday at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time for Black Politics in Minneapolis, On Point. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Used to be a fag hag, such as a tango. Skipped the life and dangle, was hooked on Prince to seem to lost her senses. Down at the beach, so watching all the creeps, so she can tell her stories to the girls back home. She went to the city and got so did it. She had to get a push, she couldn't make it on her own. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. So sometimes it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a